Marty in the Morning on RTE Lyric FM with Spry Finance. Keep living the life you love.
Michael Harding, dear heart, welcome this morning. How are we?
I'm good, Marty. How are you?
We brought you in on a terrible cold day.
No. This is a most beautiful day.
It is.
Frosty, cold, blue skies over Dublin.
Yeah.
Blue skies over Arigna, I'm told on the phone.
Go off.
Yeah.
My father used to say there's no such thing as a bad day.
Well, that's wise, isn't it?
No, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it is. But anyway, you're here and you're looking well and you're in good form.
I'm not too bad.
Good man yourself. And I didn't even give you a chance to take your coat off this morning.
I know.
I have to firstly say, the new book, I Loved Him From the Day He Died, about your father. I took it on holidays with me and in the sunshine and we were off in Greece and I flew through it and I loved it. It's an amazing journey.
Yeah,
it was great company for me it's not the sort of book I would have read when I'd be away. Would not necessarily be a book like this. And it was amazing. So I'm away, and yet I'm being brought back to Ireland all the time by the story. But more than that, I'm being brought on the walk because it's full of Camino de Santiago. And I love your picture on the cover. I love it, yourself in the little bag. It's a gorgeous photograph on the cover.
Me in the yellow bag.
The yellow bag's right. Yeah. In case you get knocked down, as my mother would say.
And I had the top of my suit in the bag.
You did. It was a gas story about the suit.
Yeah.
Not a new suit at all. The story is about your dad and finding your dad. There's a piece at the beginning, the moon and the well, not the beginning, sorry, it's in the middle of it, and I marked it today. Can I just that bit there, which I think gives people a sense of you and your dad. Would you mind just giving us that, just that piece? Yeah, just a little bit.
Oh, surely.
Yeah,
it's called The Moon in the Well. My father died in 1976 after a long withering in a Cavan hospital. I had been teaching in Loughan House since 1974, an open prison near Black Lion, a small village on the border with Northern Ireland, and commuting daily from the mountain parish of Glangevlin, spending my time with mountain folk and falling in love with every young woman who gave me the slightest attention, while at the same time being minded by the mothers of the parish and charmed by the raw masculinity of unlettered men who scraped a living coming and going from the hillsides, foddering scrawny cattle and dipping ragged sheep.
It's a great picture. It's a great picture of the time and of you and of him. He was aloof, your dad.
Do you know something? Yeah, he was aloof. He was like an Edwardian father. He was like a father that many of my generation had. Do you know, it wasn't like it is now.
Yes.
You know, the daddies were not hugging the babies.
That's right.
And pushing prams and buggies and spending afternoons with them, you know?
Yeah.
They were kind of looking at them. Is that mine? Do you know? But they were there in a way that, like, my father was reassuring. Like, I identified with them. He was a man.
Yes.
He had achieved things in life. I was a child. If I followed him, I could achieve things in life.
Yes.
He would say things like, your word is your bond, right? You'd be in the schoolyard and you'd be honest and you wouldn't tell a lie because, why? Well, your father always said, your word is your bond.
Yeah.
That kind of cracked, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they were there, but they were fierce remote pictures. Like, my father, he nearly lived in a different room. He lived in the front room, in what we used to call the drawing room.
Yeah.
And he'd nearly knock on the door.
Go away.
Yeah, he'd nearly knock on the door saying, go in to say goodnight to him. He'd be always sitting there reading.
You're right, that is very Edwardian.
Yeah, he had a standard lamp behind his armchair. Yeah. And there he sat reading all sorts of philosophers and journals, like he loved the Hibernia.
But he was a bright man. This was a reader.
Yeah.
He was a...
Yeah, he was self-educated.
Yes.
He was, you know, barefoot on the street selling the newspapers in Dublin in 2010. And he ended up as a county accountant in Cavan. With a great... Like, for example, when he died, I found books by Thomas Merton on his bookshelf. First editions of Merton's autobiography. Do you know? Like, he was really reflecting on the meaning of life. But I didn't know that.
He was
in this aloof mountain of his own solitude.
So listen, what age was he when he went?
He wasn't a young man when I was born. He was 50.
He was, yeah.
So when I was starting my teenage years, he was then an old fella.
Yeah, he was older than your mum.
Oh, yeah, by a good bit. Yeah. By a long shot.
Yeah.
So he was an old man in the house. And he had very little, you know, he had very little ways. The one thing is that I found him very gentle. But the way I think about, like, you know, when you read John McGahern and and loads of other people, like, the story of some Irish fathers is very severe.
There's no question about it.
Like loved, really scary people.
I loved John McGahern. Taught me in school.
Did he?
In Clontarf, Belgrove.
Honest to God.
Did so, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but my mother came from Athlone. My mother was mortified when the book came out and didn't tell.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other story. Your father, I love the fact that he was a gentle soul. He was a gentleman. Because you're right, at that time, men were perceived to be different. There was a...
Yeah,
harshness.
There was a fierce severity. I mean, and it came from poverty, and it came from all sorts of whatever reasons. But like,
you had to be strong, or whatever.
But there's a really negative image of the father like that. I always remember John McGahern saying about his father, and this was in the beautiful Pat Collins film that he made before John died. And John says this one terse sentence about his father. He says, "I could never understand him," right? Now, John said that with a kind of a judgment behind it. It was like a gentle way of saying he was a monster.
Yes, right?
I could never understand him, right? And it was like he gave up. But I felt that my father was a gentle man, but I couldn't understand him either. And I think that what McGahern wasn't thinking about is, in a sense, you can't understand the previous generation.
Yeah.
You really can't. And I felt that at some stage in my life, I'm now in my 70s, early 70s, and I thought, you know, I'd love to do a little ritual to bid farewell to my father.
Yes.
Even though there's a whole lot of gaps, even though he was a remote person, even though, you know, you could have a negative view of him, I still thought that it was a nice thing to do in my lifetime for closure.
Yeah.
You know, to say farewell to the ancestor.
And why did you think that the Camino would be the way to do that?
Well, do you know something? I didn't until I was doing it.
Right.
Like, I went on the Camino for practical reasons. The Camino was 20 kilometres a day walking.
You said you were slow on it.
Yeah, because I had been in Beaumont for two operations.
Correct, you had.
I had a spinal problem. Yeah. I couldn't walk.
There's not many people who do the Camino after an operation.
And
like
I said, there was a crowd in Navan, U Walks, they're called, and they were absolutely brilliant as a kind of a, you know, organising the tour. I went to them and I said, you know, I'm not in the full of health, so could you make a slow Camino for me? And so they organised what would take somebody 5 days. They let me do it in about 7 or 8 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So instead of doing the 20 kilometres, I was doing 10 kilometres a day, right? But the thing was, that was simply for practical reasons, because I'd heard so much, the Camino is so beautiful, and it's great exercise if you're my age. Okay, so off I went. And for some accidental reason, I felt nearly when I was getting off the plane. There's no answer to this. There's no reason that things happen. Sometimes people come up in your mind and there's no reason why they do. My father was like looking in the wind at me.
That's astonishing.
Yeah. And every day... And then I heard people saying that sometimes they take someone with them, like, prayerfully. Do you know that?
Yes.
That they've lost a parent, or they've lost a child, or they've separated or something. And they kind of take the person in their heart on the Camino, and that it's a beautiful way to meditate. And I thought, you know something... My father, I think, is coming with me.
But had you thought about your father in this respect before, ever? Because he's gone a long time.
Yeah, he's gone 50 years.
You know,
yeah.
So, like, it's not... Not that you didn't have time to think of this before, but obviously it just hits you at this moment.
You see, the title of the book I got from Michael Hartnett, the great poet...
Yes.
...who had written a poem about his mother, and I read that poem in 1976, when my father died. And the line in it was, "I loved her from the day she died."
Yes.
And I thought, that hits me about my father. There was something about him that I only realised I loved him when I walked away from the grave. And I thought, the shock of somebody gone is the moment you realise, I so loved him, even though he was remote. And then, 50 years later, I used it as the title for the book because I felt, in all the memoirs I've written... And I had done seven memoirs at that stage. I had done my whole life story and the various phases, including the grief for my mother. And I realised I've never actually talked about my father.
Dad. Yeah.
And I thought it'd be a very fitting end to the whole series. Final book, the best book, would be the book about your daddy.
Well, please don't tell me you're going to stop that.
I'm not going to stop writing books.
That's what I want to hear.
But the memoirs are finished now.
Memory of My Father is a piece that Cormac Butler wrote and Liam Neeson performs it. We'll just pause for a sec.
Every old man I see reminds me of my father, and he had fallen in love with death one time when sheaves were gathered. That man I saw on Gardner Street stumbled on the curb was one. He stared at me half-eyed. I might have been his son. And I remember the musician faltering over his fiddle in Bayswater, London. He too set me the riddle. Every old man I see in October-colored weather seems to say to me, I was once your father.
Memory of My Father, Patrick Kavanagh, of course, and it's Liam Neeson, and the music of Cormac Butler. That's something, isn't it?
Yeah. Every old man reminds me of my father.
You said that.
That happened to me when I was in Glengevlin, West Cavan, up the mountain, 21 years of age. Your father dies. And what do you do for the next 2 or 3 years? You spend your life in the pub talking to old fellas. Talking to, like, old fellas were in their 50s, you know.
But you're trying to bring them
back. But I'm talking to them. And as exactly Kavanagh says and Liam Neeson speaks, every old man is your father.
Yeah.
And it's like where the role model thing comes. That's what we call it nowadays. You know, that young men need old men.
Yes.
They need elders who have been wise, who are morally good, and who have a clear direction in life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. When you went on the walk, the first thing to say is you enjoyed it.
Oh, I loved it.
You really did. Now, it wasn't easy.
What I didn't put in the book, I shouldn't say it.
What was that?
I went back, after finishing the book, I went back and did it again.
You did not?
I did.
At a better pace?
Slightly. Yeah.
Why did you go back?
Huh?
Why did you go back?
Because I loved it. Because the Camino in itself, forget the book.
Yeah.
I mean, the Camino's in the book, but the Camino is such a refreshing retreat. Spiritual journey. It's absolutely wonderful because it kind of brings you into a zone of your interior spirituality, like into your hidden self. But it also is so modern. There's nothing old-fashioned or religious about it.
That's right.
You're just walking through the beautiful woods in a gorgeous landscape.
But I suppose for me, because if we take the essence of the book, I loved him from the day he died, I'm thinking, okay, here's Michael Harding. He's talking about his dad and that. The essence of the trip was you and your dad together.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised to hear that you kind of went back again. But did you bring him again, or did you let it just be about you and spirituality and all of that?
The end of that book, and without telling exactly the detail of it, it's about a rose my father had in Clare.
Correct.
And he brought this bush to Cavan when he got married.
Yes.
And when I got married and had a little house in Leitrim, Roscommon, I brought the rose with me and planted it there. And I won't say what happens at the end of the rose.
No, don't. It's a beautiful story.
But that book for me is closure. It's me bidding farewell to my father. My father bid, in 1976 when he died, the last thing he said to me, he was in a hospital in Cavan, lying in the bed. He'd been very, very ill for months and months. And I was going back to work in Glengevlin. And he pointed up into the sky and he said, There's an angel hovering. Goodbye. Right, because I was only about going to... But they were the last words he said to me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted, 50 years later, to respond to his farewell and say to him, Farewell, Daddy.
Yeah, that which is a beautiful image of the two of you.
Yeah.
Or in this case, the three of you.
Yeah.
The angel. It is a great pity by the same token. When as I read the book and I kept on thinking, if only you'd been able to go in that door and sit with him and talk to him when he was alive. But because of the way he was and men of his period were, it was not given. He was very young when he went.
Yeah. And I think that I was closer to him. He was very young.
We
think now 70.
Yeah.
What, 73? I'm now 70, nearly 72.
Are you?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And in those days, at 73, he was considered quite old.
Yeah.
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 But I think that I did get inside him in a way that maybe others didn't. You know, even his wife, like, who loved him dearly. And I talk in the end of the book how much in their later years they became devoted to each other.
They seemed to...
It was lovely.
...grow closer and
I used to kind of catch them accidentally in moments of intimacy.
Isn't that beautiful?
Sitting on the bed when he was ill, and there'd be two of them looking out the window at the day passing, as one does as an old fella. Do you know what I mean? You look out the window, look at the street,
you have a long time before you
see
start.
Who's coming and going.
But famous for looking out.
But I'd catch them sometimes. I'd go into the room and I'd see them, and you'd see the two hands were holding each other.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very special.
So, there were other times where I'd say she had a very hard life with him because he didn't know how to boil an egg.
Right.
You know, he didn't know how to cook. He was an old patriarch.
Yes.
He expected the world to be, you know, a place where women served men. And in a gentle way, but he still was a patriarch.
Yeah, not to give a nasty picture, not a nasty
picture. And she did it with devotion.
Yes.
And she had a great life herself. Like, she used to go to the golf club. She was the ladies' captain.
She was out there. The house.
But when she'd be going out to the golf, she'd leave the egg in the pot with the water on it on the ring. So all he had to do was turn the knob that would turn on the ring, right?
To make an egg.
And if, I promise you, if there wasn't water in that pot, he would have tried to boil the egg without the water.
He hadn't a clue.
He hadn't a notion.
Isn't it not mad a notion, when you like think
he was from a different planet
that's right.
The
that's
patriarchs. Right.
And of course, he probably would have assumed, without malice, that this was her place and the other things were his place.
Yeah.
And it was just the way it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it wouldn't occur to him, do you know? When you went to the walk and you met people as you went and engaged, and again, I said to myself, I wonder, would you, because I know you as I do over the years, I thought, would you engage with people? And I was curious, because of the thing with your dad, maybe you wouldn't, but you did. And that was important too.
Yeah, but I'll confess to you this, as a failure of mine consistently, I know that I talk very intimately, publicly, which is weird. And sometimes when I'm with people, I can be very defensive.
All right.
And I know it as a failure. Like, I like to watch people and I like to listen, but that's only half a dialogue.
But you're an observer.
Yeah.
You always...
But that's only half a dialogue.
Okay.
Like, there was a beautiful old man that I met three times on the Camino.
Yeah.
And again, he was like my father. He didn't visually look like him.
No.
But for some reason, it was like an elder man. He was way in his 80s.
But you
were
doing the Camino yourself almost.
Yeah.
I felt.
Yeah, and sometimes you get a bond like that between a young man and an old man.
Was it a neediness, or...?
I think sometimes it can be an intuitive bond.
Right.
That there is an archetype of fatherhood in people, and there's an archetype of child in people, and sometimes the two connect, and it's as if it's not personal to you, but some spirit of the elder is speaking to you. And I think I actually tied all that up quite accidentally. I didn't know what I was doing. But that became the way that I entered a life of kind of enthusiastic Christianity.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
because obviously the Christian story is the father.
That's right.
The fatherhood.
That's right.
And I think that accidentally happened to me because it was a kind of a reaction. I was walking away from my father's grave and feeling the loss inside me for the father and missing the intimacy because, as I say, of the remote Edwardian father. And in some way, I transposed it into a faith in the Father God. Now, that sustained me all my life and gave me happiness.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
I'm not sad about that.
No, yourself and the various artifacts of religion that you would have surrounding you from time to time that you talk about often in the books. I was fascinated by that man and your meeting with him and the fact that...
And the last moment with him.
Yes.
This strange moment. I was in the pool. There was a beautiful pool in the San Francisco Hotel. It's a gorgeous hotel.
Well, you went very posh at the end, in fairness.
Yeah, well, again, that was the...
And rightly so.
The crowd in Navan that organised it.
Right,
they chose that.
Yeah, because most...
And
they
balanced it out, you see, because you were in very cheap pension.
That's right.
Through the walk.
And then you had this opulence.
This beautiful opulence of the last two nights.
That's right.
When you're in Santiago.
Sorry, I stopped.
And there was a swimming pool outside, in a big building outside.
Yes.
And there I was on my own in the jacuzzi, and in walks the fellow I had met on the walk. I didn't know who he was, except he was Irish. And he swam up to the top end, so he was a good bit away. He didn't know I was there, and I realised that he had started weeping. He was crying. And you think, has he lost his partner? Has he lost his beloved? Is there something terribly wounded in him that's making him cry at the end of the Camino? But that's what the Camino is.
Yeah.
You know, that could be, he could have been having a moment of joy on his own that brought him to tears. There's really strange and beautiful things happen on the Camino, and you can't intrude on them. So I slipped out. I never asked him, like, what upset you there in the pool?
You didn't?
No.
And I suspect that, in a way, that was probably quite difficult to do, not to... Or did you just not want to intrude?
For me, it's not, because, again, as I say, I have... My weakness is that I don't respond to people's openness.
Yeah, it's funny, because you're so deep and you think so much.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that either.
Why did you? Will you stay with me for a little
while? I'd love to,
please do.
Yeah.
Again, some lovely messages in. I'm supposed to be at work, says Patrick. He says, but I can't turn off the interview. I said, work will come. Work will come. A wonderful gentleman, Michael Harding, who was so kind to send me. You sent a beautiful psalm. When my husband transitioned last February, Caroline in Cork has been to say so good morning to you and thank you. And I could listen to Michael Harding from morning to night. His insights feel so personal and powerful. So many of us had fathers like Michael's. Thank you again, Michael. That's Graham Clifford in Fermoy. So those people obviously really, and that's the thing that I loved him from the day he died. Is instantly relatable for so many people.
That's right.
And that's the thing.
Yeah.
That thing where we're not alone. None of us are. We think we are. And we think we're unique and we think we're different. Yeah. In many ways, we're not.
No.
We're all interesting.
It's extraordinary how so similar we all are.
Isn't it just?
Yeah.
You'll stay for a little while.
Of course.
You're a gentleman. What is it now? It's 20 past nine.
RTE Lyric FM Traffic and Travel, sponsored by Citroën. Citroën, for everyone, but like no one.
Now, Sinead, there you are.
Hello.
There you are. I'm chatting away. Michael Harding here. Sure,
enjoying it, I have to say.
Elfin is on a bench.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, you better tell us what the latest is. What's happening out there?
I'll start off in Cork, as it's slow on the Douglas Road southbound and also on the Bandon Road northbound. There's been a collision in Tipperary this morning on the M7 eastbound between Junction 22, Ross Cray, and Junction 21, Boris and Ossory. It's heavy in Clare on the M18 southbound from Junction 11, Drumoland, to a collision at Junction 10, Newmarket on Fergus. In Limerick, busy on the Ballysimon Road inbound and on the Corbally Road southbound. There's an inbound queue in Galway on the Old Dublin Road near the Coast Road this morning. Elsewhere around the country, there are delays on the N4 inbound from Junction 5, Leakslip, all the way to the M50. And in the capital, it's slow as well on Dorset Street southbound. Finally, we've reports coming in of a breakdown on the M50 southbound between Junction 12, that's Firhouse, and Junction 13, that's Dundrum. So take care this morning if you're on that motorway. And that's the latest traffic and travel news.
All right, so Sinead, God bless. I shall talk to you in the morning, please.
Absolutely.
God.
Absolutely.
Fingers crossed. All will be well. Take her handy and wear your jumper. Talk to you in the morning.
God bless.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax, take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now. And I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got, for you will still be here tomorrow, but your dreams may not. How can I try to explain? When I do, he turns away again. It's always been the same, same old story. Change, just sit down, take it slowly. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to go through. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. Keeping all the things I knew inside, it's hard, but it's harder to ignore it. If they were right, I'd agree, but it's them they know, not me. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go.
Cat Stevens, Father and Son. It just seems appropriate. We were just talking about the fact, yeah. Michael Harding with me, I loved him from the day he died, is the book. And we were just saying, that was of the time.
It was of the time, because I remember I'd be wandering around in me Cortina Mark One, and you'd have an old tape deck.
Yes.
And Cat Stevens, that's one of the songs you'd be playing over and over again.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. Isn't that funny? You're doing the tour. You're on the tour in January.
Yeah, after Christmas.
For those who haven't been, and I see you're in the pavilions on the 14th and 15th, you're doing two nights in the pavilions in Dunleary. For those who haven't been at any of your events, can you give them a sense of what it is and what it is you do and how you run
what
it?
I do is, with every book, because I see myself as a storyteller, I see myself, no matter what I'm doing, in the newspaper, in the book, I'm telling stories. And I'm telling stories about my experience, that's all. So I take the book and I have an evening with Michael Harding, and it's about, you know, an hour and a quarter, and I just stand there on the stage and I tell stories. I tell the story in the book, basically. And so it's, somebody called it stand-up philosophy, because it's 70% comedy. Like, I'm just telling funny stories in some sense, but 30% of it would be very heartfelt. And in relation to the book. So yes. this journey will be a journey about my father and about the Camino and about what fatherhood means to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And reminiscences. And I'm very conscious, there's a message after coming in from someone who said, my father passed away yesterday. Please thank Michael for his words. I will remember them. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. That even... and they have the radio on today, and they're listening to you, and how it can connect.
Yeah,
that you have this story of your dad, perhaps a very different dad to that one there, but still the connection is there. And
the connection, because what we were saying just off air is that as humans we're just so similar.
Yeah,
like we're so similar. We want love, we want affection, we want to be minded by our parents, we want to have families. You know, we're similar, and we're afraid of death, and we're lonely when we lose people, we grieve.
You're not afraid of death, are you?
I am, of course I am. Everybody is.
But you have a great sense of faith and belief.
Yeah.
And you would still have the fear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in some sense, faith comes out of fear.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the anxiety of existential life, the feeling of being isolated and existentially alone is exactly what creates religion. Everybody makes the mistake of thinking that religion is a kind of an arrogant, naive assertion that there's meaning in the universe.
Yeah.
And it's not. Whether it's Islamic or Christian or Jewish, it's all a tentative response to the real anxiety that we're alive for a very short time. And so we try to conjure up from our experience of love a bigger meaning in the universe. And isn't that a beautiful kind of poetry?
That's right, because it's needed.
Yeah.
Another message says Mary Glennon says, Michael has me hugging a picture of my dad, who was the most beautiful, adoring, loving person. I miss him terribly. Yeah. Again, the connection.
I know,
again,
connection.
You're not going to stop writing books, are you?
Oh, no.
You were saying to me there when we were listening to Cat Stevens that if you take all the books as a block...
Yeah.
It's a top, middle and bottom. It's a beginning, a middle and end.
Yeah, it was one big, long project. I had written three novels, but I felt that even the novels were very personal, and I wanted to do a journal of ordinary life over a long period. So I took a full decade from 2013 to 2024.
Was that the plan always?
It was the plan always to do a very long chronicle.
Yeah.
And that's why I started, that's what I pitched, for example, to the Irish Times.
Sure.
Way back in 2006, that I'd love to do this kind of long chronicle of ordinary life, where you're talking about not the big things like politics or whatever.
Yeah.
But you're just talking about, you know, your digestive system this morning. your flatulence last night.
That's right. Or the operation you had.
Yeah,
whatever
the things that make us human and they make us ordinary.
Yeah, very
because
true.
And I got that. I was inspired really by Pepys' Diary, the 1600s. The guy who, in England, he wrote this beautiful Pepys' Diary. And it's like...
Oh, Pepys' Diary, yes.
Yeah,
Samuel Pepys.
It's full of these details, not just about coronations and big things happening, but like his wife's dog is sick and threw up on the floor of the kitchen. And I'm reading this like it happened 400 years ago. And yet that's the thing that connects with us.
Well, it's like when you were talking about being in hospital.
It makes us ordinary.
It makes us ordinary, you know. I just love the fact we started with Staring at Lakes, the first one, and we've been with you all through.
Yeah.
And I hope you'll come and talk to us about the next one.
Oh, I sure will,
And you know, you don't know what it is, maybe, or you do, but whatever it is, you make it interesting, you make it accessible, and we just are terribly taken with you, my friend, and it's lovely to see you again.
And thank you.
Not at all. I'll give you one more from Selma. I'm so pleased to hear Michael Harding on with you this morning. We read his books to my mum in her final days earlier this year, and it gave us all great comfort and connection. My mum was very inspired by you, and we miss her terribly, and to say thank you on her behalf from Selma. That's Selma Healy.
Well, thank you,
Selma. That's something.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? God bless you, and safe journeys.
And thank you so much, Marty.
Always a pleasure, Michael. Can I say Happy Christmas?
You sure can.
That's the boy.